Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Grace Seegers.
And Haley Birdwilt unfortunately could not be with us in this episode, but we're looking forward to having her back very soon. In the meantime, we have a very special guest for this episode. Lily Hay-Newman is a security reporter at Wired and very apropos for the topic that we're going to be discussing this time. Lily, welcome to Huff Takes.
I'm no Haley, but I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about surveillance in Star Wars. We've seen some intriguing portrayals of the Imperial surveillance state in Obi-Wan Kenobi and Andor, as well as throughout the rest of the saga. But some things just don't seem to add up, or at least they ask us to suspend our disbelief a little bit. So here we're going to try to dive into what makes sense and what maybe doesn't, and the possible explanations for that. I want to start with kind of a general question, which is, when we look at the kinds of surveillance we see in Star Wars, is it realistic for the galaxy that we're witnessing here? Does the size of the Empire give us a reasonable explanation for why there are these security lapses, like the Imperial Security Bureau not realizing that Cassian is in custody on Narkeena 5? And how do we compare the challenges that the Empire faces to the real-world challenges that we've seen the U.S. government face, for example, in terms of connecting the dots after terrorist attacks, which is something that the intelligence community is always trying to get better at? How does that shape how we look at the challenges that are faced by the Empire? Lily, do you want to start?
Yeah, so for me, I think I find the surveillance proposition mostly compelling or believable in the Star Wars universe. But I think the reason for that is that I sort of take what the movies, the saga, I like to use that word, the saga, has signaled to us about the state of technology in the universe. I take that seriously, or sort of I am looking at it through that lens. If you, and so meaning things like the degree to which networked computers do or don't exist, seemingly a like lack of a public internet, minimal or no cloud computing. If you take those things to be the state of affairs in this universe, coupled with the scale of the galaxy and all these different planets, you know, some more inhabited than others, and at different points in development and things like that, then yeah, I think it all hangs together. But I'm an avid Huff Takes listener, and I know you all have discussed in the past feeling kind of differently, that maybe it isn't so compelling, both in terms of the surveillance that especially the Empire is capable of, and in terms of whether that state of technology really makes sense. Like, would that really be the point that the technological evolution is at for computing in this universe? So I'm very curious to talk about all of that. But for me, I'm doing pretty well. I feel like it's compelling.
So I personally have to think about this in two ways. First of all, the meta way, which I won't super get into right now, but hopefully we can talk about later, where that's when we consider, you know, that this came out originally in the 70s and is the technological advancement is contingent upon the time when it first came out. But let's throw away the meta angle and just engaging purely with the text. I kind of go back and forth on how convincing I find it. Like, droids are just so advanced and have this intelligence that amounts to personhood, essentially. But they can't figure out that there's a kid named Luke Skywalker on Tatooine. Like, Skywalker. So there's definitely a bit of suspension of disbelief that has to be there for me, because I can kind of explain away, you know, the Empire is gigantic, things get more difficult as they have to stretch their reach ever longer, but also you get to the point where you think, how could the Empire sustain itself if they can't even have those things under control? But then going back, I reconvince myself of the other side of the coin, which is that this lack of total surveillance over everything shows some of the inherent weaknesses of the Empire and of trying to control such a physically large and diverse galaxy and population. So clearly, as you can hear from me arguing with myself, I go back and forth on this a lot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned that this, it actually illustrates a weakness of the Empire. It's not purely, you can look at it as a plot hole of like, well, this is just not credible that you would have all this technology, but you wouldn't be able to use it in these ways. But you can also look at it as, inevitably, when you have something this big and this complicated, certain things aren't going to work the way they do in the real world, where we don't have as much of that complexity. We have complexity, and certainly we see this breakdown in the real world because of that complexity. So you can look at it as an affirmation of one of the points of the franchise, which is something this big and this overzealous is going to have weaknesses that undermine its ability to exert control. I mean, that's part of the storytelling, is that the Empire has these weaknesses that you just have to figure out how to exploit. And I do think, you know, Lily, you were mentioning that there are these technological limitations that are a bit hard to square with the advances, right? So we don't really know how much they have a Star Wars version of the cloud. We don't know how connected things are, right? Is it possible that Narkeena 5 has a local database of prisoners that they're not sharing with the broader Empire? And, you know, we'd sit here and say, well, that's ridiculous. I mean, that would never happen in the real world. But
no,
then you
no,
get
no.
into.
I don't agree.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I think that's exactly what we're seeing, is that everything is local. Like, and that's the thing, Grace. That's how I view the droid thing. Is like the crucial thing they're missing is like networked concepts. So if droids were like a networked intelligence, or like the Borg hive mind or something from Star Trek, then yeah, the Empire, that's it. Like, the Empire would be all-powerful. But actually, you know, we, similar to the real world, there is no, like, total surveillance. And it costs a lot of money to do surveillance, especially on a large scale. And as a result, there are, you know, these cracks in any scheme. And that is, you know, as it is in the Star Wars universe, a good thing for freedom fighters, right? Like, and we see it. So like with the thing about the prison, I think that's exactly what we're supposed to take from it, is that all these municipalities, local law enforcement, local government, their databases are not networked with like a big Empire-wide database. And if you want to combine the data, you have to do some type of like put it all on a thumb drive and take it to central services or whatever physically in order to do it. And that kind of stuff does come up, like even, you know, in the United States, for example, things happen sometimes where, you know, we only discover, I don't know, it could be in a good way or a bad way. We only discover that, you know, people aren't getting social services that they should be eligible for, or maybe we discover that, you know, someone's exploiting an unemployment system or something, when two databases get networked, you know, or get integrated that never were before, because there was like the municipal level versus the state level, or the state level versus the federal level. I feel like we see this in the US all the time. And we often talk about how that is actually a crucial privacy protection. To, like, for example, with license plate data, or, you know, driver's license data, if all the states were to combine all of that, that's just like a central repository of data on all Americans, right? And that's not necessarily a good thing, because that's state data, that's not federal data.
And that also reminds me of, you know, how often do we hear that after a mass shooting, you know, the local police had talked to the guy, or the state police had pulled the guy over, and there was some indication that this individual had contact with law enforcement, but they didn't tell the FBI, or the FBI was told, but it didn't get to the right field office. I mean, that does happen in the real world. And I guess, you know, that we'll talk about the meta aspect of how much do we want to map our own real world experiences onto our judgment of Star Wars. But I think it's a fair question about, you know, do we want to port this over completely and just say, well, we can believe that the same problems would exist in the same ways? Or do we want to say that it doesn't make much sense that this wouldn't be more automated in Star Wars than it is in the real world? Because certainly in the real world, we can understand shortcomings in automation, shortcomings in IT. I mean, it's hard to do these things in the real world with the budgets that all these different people have. In Star Wars, we see enough technological advancement in other ways that I think it does strain credulity a little bit to say that they wouldn't have automated a lot of this already, in terms of, you know, if you're an Imperial prison facility, you should be able to pull down prisoner records from and send prisoner records back up to a central system. Like, I think that is kind of a basic element of not even just a totalitarian state, but any large government, even a democratic one. If you're going to have law enforcement, you want to be able to make sure that information is updated everywhere, especially if you know that you're dealing with a physically large area where people in one place don't have firsthand knowledge of everybody who could wander into their territory. They're going to need to rely on records. But I want to ask about, I want to go back to that droid issue and kind of reframe it in the context of big data and the analysis that we see being done. We do see computer systems generating reports, but we don't see too much of what we would think of as big data, which is basically, you know, taking this data that we have about people's movements, about the financial transactions that they're making, and generating insights into here's where they're probably going, here's what they're probably doing. We don't really see a ton of that kind of analysis in Star Wars. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, do we think that's a technological limitation? Does that get back to kind of this meta thing of, well, the story would be over if we could really see big data used that way? I mean, what is realistic for what the Empire should be able to get out of the quantity of data that it has about people's movements and their identities?
So I think a really interesting element of this conversation that I genuinely would not have thought about except for Lily, because I am not a surveillance or security expert. I do not know anything about these things. And so something that I often forget is that data needs to be stored somewhere. That sounds really obvious, but I forget about the external physical aspect of data storage. And I think that you can kind of factor that into the Star Wars universe, which is already in a sense a very tactile universe where pretty much the vibes are as important as anything else in the storytelling. But when you look at droids as data receptacles who aren't connected to each other, that's a really interesting thought, because they're basically these data storage units that can communicate with each other and maybe can communicate with a networked computer system, but on their own, they also are just an individual repository. And I think that's a really interesting way to think about it, because when you think of it not being linked in the same way that we think of with the cloud, or even looking at the Borg or Cylons, where they're not all automatically interconnected with each other, then it begins to make more sense to me that having this each individual data storage components, whether it's a droid or a computer, on a very grand scale, that makes more sense to me, that of course things are going to fall through the cracks because they're just not networked.
Yeah, and the big data concept is really interesting You know, I think droids, I'm starting to think that droids act more as like the sort of internet bridge, like in absence of the concept of the internet, you know, at the time that Star Wars was first made, but also just like, if, again, if we remove that and just say like that concept doesn't exist for whatever reason, droids are like just sort of your walking smartphone where it can, you know, they can tell you, they can convert, I don't know, whatever, you know, convert to the metric system for you, or, you know, count credits, or do, you know, those types of like calculations and basic things you need. They can, we know that they can translate things, but they're also specialized. So like, I don't know, what's the thing, which droid can talk to water compressors, or, you know, whatever it is. They all have different things that they can do and different like physical capabilities. So, yeah, I think it is just this totally other concept of the, of like a decentralized vision of computing from, you know, before like the public internet was really conceived, or like certainly before it was a mainstream concept. But it kind of works. It's like an alternative path. And even in, you know, the early conceptions of the internet, that, you know, there's the concept of decentralization, everybody running their own email server, you know, everyone storing their own data locally, like before the concept of the cloud came into being, really, or a public cloud, these you can still sort of have networking, but with decentralization. I don't know. These are all, you know, real concepts in computing in our world. So I think that's why I'm so open to it in the Star Wars world, because it's as if they just sort of went on this other fork in the road of how computing evolved. But yes, I mean, also, right, they have like, you know, artificial intelligence, you know, and sentience that, you know, has achieved like personhood, and yeah, on the other hand, like I also get what you're both saying, that the technology in other ways is so incredibly advanced that kind of hard to believe they didn't invent the internet.
What's funny to me is when like there'll be scenes where two droids will be talking to each other and they'll come to some conclusion, or other characters will come to a conclusion based on the conversation that the droids are having. And it's always like a little bit funny to me to watch, because it's like you could just plug into each other and instantly arrive at the exact conclusion that you're looking for by exchanging data at like machine speed, as we call it. Like it's inefficient for you to be puzzling out the situation by having a conversation in sort of a conventional human way. You're built to be able to have much faster communication between each other digitally, and like that's your whole purpose, is to be able to move faster than people. But again, we're going to get to this, it's the reason is it's not fun to watch two droids just beep and hum while they're plugged into each other. You want to hear a conversation. That's why they're not just walking hard drives, they have voices and personalities. So there's that tension of like, this is better for the story because this is a fictional franchise. But if this were real, they would never exchange information this way. It would be much faster and much smarter to just plug into each other and, you know, run the numbers or whatever. So that's kind of another thing that I always find funny, is watching those moments where it's like, well, if that technology really existed, it would never be used this way. There would be no point in having it used this way.
That's super interesting. Just quickly, as you were talking, I was thinking about, like, there are some machine-to-machine interfaces, like R2, or, like, droids can be the co-pilot in ships, like X-Wings, right?
Right.
But, yeah, you're right. We don't usually, like, it's not implied that, like, when there's no, what's it called, organic life form in the room, that droids just like plug into each other and talk at machine speed. That is not implied, I don't think. That's really interesting.
I want to talk a little bit about where and when people are watching, because, again, I brought up Obi-Wan and Andor earlier, and these are both shows where we know that, you know, we have surveillance footage of Andor. You know, we see Cyril looking at his picture in Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, they post the wanted picture of Obi-Wan. So clearly, like, there is some apparatus of cameras and be on the lookout and all that kind of stuff. But there are places where the Empire doesn't watch, where you would think maybe they should be watching, and the only explanation is basically arrogance, right? And the classic example is the prison, where Cassian says, they don't even think they need to listen to us, because what's the worst that could happen? They've got us under their thumb, and that's their blind spot, right? And of course, he's right, that is their blind spot. But again, the Empire does understand the need to have some level of surveillance in certain places. So I guess my question is, does Star Wars do a good enough job of in providing in-universe explanations for why they're watching in certain places and not others, and you know, setting aside the real-world stuff, they have to have an in-universe explanation. How good of a job do they do at that? Grace, maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm not totally convinced by the job that they do. You mentioned Obi-Wan, and that just got me thinking again about how in episode 4 they know that Princess Leia is down on Tatooine, so there is now an Imperial presence on Tatooine, and they don't have records where they could look up, hey, there's this guy named Ben Kenobi. Wow, how common his last name is Kenobi. Maybe we should look him up, because this could be the same guy that we were just looking for like 10 years ago. So that to a degree strains credulity, that when they are in the same sort of physical space, like they're on Tatooine, there's no real excuse for them not to notice this, except for the fact that I guess they're not looking for Kenobi. But still, if you assume that there is any sort of database that they could look into, and maybe I'm wrong to even assume that, but that, I think, that's what I always go back to, is thinking about how Obi-Wan goes by Ben Kenobi and Luke Skywalker has the last name Skywalker. And that's a very different question from Andor, which is a very sophisticated story, although, as you mentioned earlier, Eric, it does raise some of those same issues. But to the degree where I can believe or suspend my disbelief for a show like Andor, it's harder for me than looking at what's going on Tatooine, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, like sometimes they do a better job than other times. I felt in Obi-Wan that, like, he's really, like, gallivanting about a lot, quite a lot. And, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you know, sort of suspend disbelief a bit, as Grace was saying before. They kind of push it sometimes. Also in, I think, Eric, maybe in the notes when we were, you know, discussing this episode, you mentioned, or maybe someone else mentioned Rebels. Like, they similarly, they are just kind of like around doing shit a lot. And wait, sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed. Am I allowed to curse on Hoth Takes? Sorry.
We'll bleep you. It's okay.
My bad. My bad. Anyway, as they're going, you know, gallivanting about in Rebels, I don't know, but I do want to really quickly go on a tangent, which is to say, like, this universe also has a bigger problem, right, with this question, which is, for example, why doesn't Darth Vader sense that he has two children? And can I ask you guys to remind me of what the canon explanation is for that? Like, in the Force.
I don't know that they're, I don't know that they ever really explain it, except to say that he just didn't ever think to he just thought Padme died and that was that. And so, you know, that maybe the grief of that obscured his ability. I mean, you can hear me speculating here because I don't think that they ever actually say what the reason is. But you're right. That is something that you would think if this were all the real thing happening, he would sense them.
Yeah, I think now that you're saying it, it's like the Emperor says to him, like, I think he says that, like, she and the babies died. So, like, that's what he's been told. But he should still be able to, you know, so he's blinded by his grief and his rage, like you're saying. But, right, there is this whole other surveillance technology in this universe called the Force that people don't always, and I know the Force is murky and you can't read the future and, you know, dreams aren't necessarily prophecies and all this stuff. But yeah, I mean, we're like dealing with a bunch of sort of hairy issues in this regard. It isn't just like literal surveillance technology. It's also the
so
Force.
That actually makes me think too about in episode 6 when Darth Vader and Luke are fighting, Vader is able to sense that Luke has a twin sister. So that also kind of lends credence to your line of questioning, where if he can sense that Luke has a twin sister, why is he only sensing that now? Why couldn't he sense that earlier?
I kind of read that as Luke was thinking about her in that moment and they were in such close proximity. I mean, some of the Force stuff, as you said, Lily, it's not clear what the range is on the Force. Sometimes
or is it like
they can,
mind reading or just vibing?
Right. Sometimes they can sense things that are happening across the galaxy. Other times things are happening where you know that they would sense them if they were closer to that thing, because they've sensed similar things when they are close to it, but they just happen to be far away and so they don't sense it. And then, yeah, it's not clear how much it's how close you are versus how intense the person's feeling is that you're trying to sense, or if you even have to try, if you can just get hit in the head with it sometimes when you're not even actively trying to sense it, it just pops up. Like, yes, it's a thing that is a little bit outside of our ability to understand. And another example of the story dictating things more than the science. But I know that, you know, Lily, you also wanted to mention the Jedi Temple security cameras. And this is another example of, you know, they are, you know, even in that case, they have the presence of mind to put in cameras to see what's going on. And yet it sort of feels like all these Imperial facilities that our heroes are attacking or whatever, like if those places had cameras and those cameras had any kind of facial recognition, the Empire would have such a good ability to track sort of the main characters, and yet it feels like they never seem to know where these guys are, or like to build a profile of like where they're going to strike next based on where they've been so far, which sort of goes back to the big data thing. But it's like, how do we make sense of where the cameras are and where they're not? Because it does not seem consistent.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric, for that segue. Shout out to you, because I did just really want to mention for the listeners that this is such a pivotal plot device that after Anakin slaughters, you know, this massacre of the younglings in the Jedi Temple, that, you know, Yoda and Obi-Wan go and review the security footage of him doing that. And Yoda even says, I think, like, don't watch it, man. And Obi-Wan is like, I have to. Which, side note, is another example of, like, search your feelings. You know it to be true. Like, they, you know, I think that's what Yoda's saying. It's like, you don't really need to watch it. And he's like, I can't believe it until I watch it. But meanwhile, it's like, why, of all places, are there security cameras, you know, in that room where the younglings were, like, I mean, right, this is like they're sort of like all hiding together, taking shelter in like one of these main rooms of the temple or something as Order 66 is being executed. Is that right?
I think so. I think that might have even been like the council chamber. I forget room that Anakin walks into. What's the room? Grace, do you remember the room where they, Master Skywalker, yeah. There are too many of them. I think it's the council chamber, right?
I remembered it as just like a classroom.
Okay.
But
I might be conflating.
We could all be wrong and we'll get angry.
We can fact check for the episode notes. But I just found it surprising that there are cameras there in this really peaceful place, but there are, you know, there aren't cameras in other places that would have like captured Palpatine doing sketchy stuff or whatever, because that would, you know, obviously mess with this multi-decade like scheme he's working on. And I do feel like that is just a bit of a complicated area. But in terms of like on all the planets and in all the star systems all over the galaxy, yeah, it's hard to do full coverage of security cameras in every single place everywhere. Like, that's okay with me. And maintenance issues are real. Like, just recently in New York City, there's been all this discussion of the fact that, first of all, there aren't security cameras in each subway car. And now the city and state governments are saying they're going to add them to each subway car because of violence or sort of, you know, concerns about upticks in crime and things like that. But then additionally, you know, there was a big shooting in the subway, I believe in the summer of 2022. And there were cameras that weren't working. They like weren't functioning to capture footage. I can't remember if it was that they were like out of battery or out of storage or what was going on. But so, you know, I think on the scale of the whole galaxy, it's realistic that there would be these like lapses and blind spots in like CCTV coverage. But specifically this thing of where there are and aren't cameras on Coruscant and in the sort of political sphere, that, I don't know. I feel like there's just some plot stuff at work there versus...
Now I'm just imagining like the Senate security technician like sitting in his office like late at night. Nobody's supposed to be in like the Senate building, and he gets like a motion sensor alert from like Palpatine's office, and he just like pulls it up because he wants to make sure nobody has broken in. And it's like Palpatine sitting there, and he's practicing his evil laugh. He's practicing like the chair spin, like he thinks nobody's watching, and so he's just like, he's putting it all out there, and this guy is watching like, what am I seeing? What is going on here? Talk about a plot problem.
Right, he's like holding a holocron or whatever they're called.
So I've come up with two dumb explanations for this, which either one is ridiculous, but so ridiculous that they just could work. Number one, only Jedi use cameras. And that's why they're in the Jedi Temple and nowhere else, is because the Jedi are the only ones who are like, hey, this is a cool technology, maybe we should use it. And everyone else is like, nah. Or, you know, maybe it's even a secret proprietary technology. We don't know. But that's my first theory. It's just a Jedi thing. My second theory is that most people don't use the security cameras. Like, there may be security cameras, but most people don't use them or rely on them because they have droids to do everything and capture everything they feel like need to be captured. So even if there are cameras, they may just not be in use because it could be considered a redundant technology. And I think both of these explanations are silly, but so is this plot hole. So you do what you gotta do.
I'm gonna unfortunately have to shoot down the first one because we do see cameras in the Death Star detention block. In fact, they make a point of shooting them, which I think is one of the few times that we actually see anybody deliberately take action to foil a surveillance system like that, a sort of a system that we can imagine in the real world. That's a very sort of real-world action of shooting directly at a camera, as opposed to some of the more fancy Star Wars technology that we don't really have an analog for. But I will make up for it, Grace, with a third. I will give you a third theory. You can put this in your roster, which is they forgot the passwords for the surveillance system monitoring software, and it's they tried to find the boxes, because you know how on the box it always had the default username and password. They tried to find those. Generally, they can't find the box, and even when they can, they discover that somebody has changed the password, right? Because you don't want to use the default password. Pro tip, folks, when you get a router, change the password right away. So at some point, somebody changed the password, and they're locked out, and they can't get in. How's that?
And they can't guess that it's like Wookiee123 or whatever? No, I think this is great, Eric.
Well, hopefully they're doing something smarter than Wookiee123. Hopefully maybe it's like Wookiee1234.
Exclamation or maybe like, point.
Exclamation point, definitely.
Or yeah. They tried to spell out a Wookiee growl, and then they immediately forget how many like G's and R's and A's they use. Like, that's just an impossible, like, remembering how you would actually spell one of those. It's a whole headache. Actually, speaking of problems with surveillance, I want to talk a little bit about ways to defeat the surveillance state of Star Wars. We've seen a few examples already. One of them is these, you know, I'm sorry, Grace, trigger warning for you here, because I'm going to have to bring up the Mod Parlor from the Book of Boba Fett. We see that there are technologies out there to change how you look. Presumably a big part of this is to defeat technological surveillance, which would be automatically recognizing you and pinging some security officer. So that exists. And we also see in The Mandalorian, was it actually in one of the Book of Boba Fett episodes? Oh, I think it was. I think it was in the one where he gets the N1 starfighter.
You guys can't even like talk about Book of Boba Fett. You can't even acknowledge that it existed.
We can talk about it. We're just annoyed by it.
We're just going to be really, really down on it. But we'll get to that, because listeners should know that Lily is very, very enamored with the Book of Boba Fett. And we are going to have you back on to talk about why you're wrong. But if I can just make my second point, which is when the Mandalorian gets his new ship, he specifically is happy about the fact that it's not an Imperial era ship with a formal registration system. It's from the Republic era. And, you know, Lily, as you point out in our notes, that implies that there is some, like, there's a reason why he wouldn't want it to be an Imperial era ship that is presumably registered. There's probably some kind of Empire-wide system for registering vehicles, or maybe, you know, maybe each sector has one or something. But there are ways to get around these things, as we've seen in these two examples. And I guess my question is, and actually I'll throw in a third, which is apparently everybody in the Empire has a unique identifier, whether they like it or not, like that can be used to find them. Like Boba Fett like shows like his chain code at one point, and then that's how they found Grogu, is like the Werner Herzog gives the Mandalorian Grogu's chain code to find him. Like, that was a new thing introduced in the Mandalorian. We don't know the parameters of that and how effective that is. But I guess my question is, what do we think about the way that we see these two sides of the surveillance technology and the ways of defeating it? I mean, is facial recognition even useful in a world where you have mod parlors?
Oh my gosh, there's so much here. Okay, first of all, on the mod parlor thing, I would just add that I think we also see that body modification is possible from like the fact that Anakin is able to make just a new hand for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that apparently, like, artificial skin is a thing. So, yeah, I mean, that definitely is a technology that exists and that would potentially be a way to defeat facial recognition technology. But there's so much else. To the question about names and, like, you know, Ben Kenobi, keeping the last name Skywalker, and to the point about chain codes, I feel that there's just a lot we don't know about citizen identification and authentication, paying taxes, whatever, in the Star Wars universe or in the Empire specifically. I don't feel like I have a good grasp of, like, just because they go by those names, what is, you know, what names are registered on your identification. For example, I don't think Rey really has a last name.
I think Jakku is probably, like, as far from a registered planet as you can imagine.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. But, you know, I just don't feel like we have a good sense. Do we ever see anyone, like a Jedi or a regular person or whatever, flash, like, a badge or, like, a driver's license or, you know, some type of physical authentication credential? I don't think so.
I don't think so, which is funny because one of the most famous scenes in Star Wars is literally the stormtrooper asking Obi-Wan, like, for his identification. Like, that's a whole, that's been memed to you know, to the end of the world. And yet, we never actually figure out what was he supposed to have shown. Was it, like, an actual, like, ID card?
That's a great point. But, yeah, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's just, like, I don't think, you know, as far as I know, that that apparatus or that mechanism has been, like, built out in the canon. So I just think we don't know the answers to a lot of these questions of, like, is it that the system is failing, or is it that there isn't a system, or, you know, how hard is it to game the system? How hard is it to, like, you know, change your name, have a new identity, have a fake passport, like these types of things? In our world, those types of things are possible, but they're very hard, but they're possible. And they're pretty, like, quite possible, depending on your context, with resources. So, like, all those things may be true in the Star Wars universe too, or maybe not. I don't know. Chain codes are super interesting to me. I don't quite get how they work. At first, when you were talking, I was thinking, like, didn't they put, like, a tracker on him or something? And I still can't remember. But regardless, it is the thing that the bounty hunters get the pucks, and then the pucks start beeping the beeps are closer together once you're close to the person, and not everyone has a tracker on them. So, yeah, that's the chain code thing. So I don't know if that's, like, a physical authentication token, like a YubiKey or something that you plug in to a computer. We do know that officers in the Empire have something like that to authenticate themselves, or, you know, validate their identity by plugging something into a computer. But I don't know for regular citizens. So many questions.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense for a tyrannical regime to require everybody under its jurisdiction to, like, you got to get implanted with this chip. It tracks you everywhere. You can scan it and we'll see, you know, like a dog, like, we can scan it and see who you are. And yet, as we've talked about in Star Wars, it's a huge galaxy, lots of areas not formally under Imperial control, lots of places where that system just would not be able to be enforced very effectively. And then, of course, in the New Republic era, when the Empire has fallen and you just have the Imperial remnant, like, they wouldn't be able to enforce that in half the places that they could before. So I don't think it's that Grogu, and also Grogu was born in the time of the Republic, there's just, like, we don't really have any sense of how that chain code is working. If it's a tracker, if it's, like, biometric signature that everybody has, so many questions there. I do think the Mod Parlor thing is interesting just because, yes, that exists in the real world to some degree, but it's expensive and it's complicated. And I guess my intuition from watching the appearance of the Mod Parlor in Book of Boba Fett was it's much cheaper. It's not nothing, but, like, more, it's accessible to more people. I mean, if it's going to happen in this out-of-the-way place, on this out-of-the-way planet, to me, that signals this has been democratized a little bit more. It's a little bit more accessible to your average smuggler. If he wants to get away from the crime lord that he double-crossed, he can get his face changed, and suddenly no camera will pick him up and tell the crime lord. I don't know. Grace, what do you think about that push and pull of technology and counter-technology?
So once we get to these deep questions that both of you are raising, it just becomes a lot harder for me to continue to consider in-universe explanations. And the best in-universe explanation that I can come up with is just that the galaxy is big and perhaps the Empire has tried different forms of getting people to register themselves or be registered, tracking people, but that may be dependent on where a planet is, a system is, the level of control that the Empire has over that system. I think the same thing is true for the facial technology as well, especially if we continue to assume that data is siloed. So if someone changes their face and then goes to another planet, well, then no one on this new planet knows anything about them, and then they can truly disappear in a way that you may not think possible with such advanced technology, just because it's too big for everyone to keep track of. I'm not sure if I'm fully convinced by that argument. I think the farther along we go down this road, the more meta I personally have to get. But that's the best explanation in universe that I can come up with.
So before we get to that, you know, big meta question to kind of wrap us up, let's just each kind of go, you know, briefly around and just say all these things we've talked about, you know, do we accept the kind of reasonableness or the logic of them in universe? Does it work for us to explain some of this the way that we have by saying it's complicated, the galaxy is big, there are ways to get around it? Does it work? And I'll go first and just briefly say no. Frankly, if you just stick to an in-universe explanation, I don't buy it. It doesn't make sense that it would be so slipshod, particularly at the height of the Empire. I don't accept the argument that the galaxy is big. Yes, real-world problems exist with all these things, but this is a very powerful galactic government, you know, full of people whose entire jobs should be to maintain systems like this, and it doesn't work for me. So that's me. Grace, do you want to add anything to what you were saying?
The only thing I would say is that I just go back and forth. So having just listened to everything you said, Eric, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work. But before you said all of that, I was thinking, I don't know, maybe it does work. Maybe I can buy it. So, frankly, I am just completely and totally on the fence, and it varies moment by moment.
All right, so Grace is lost in the wilderness. She has nothing to root her to any opinion one way or the other. She'll just agree with whoever the last person was who spoke. Lily, exactly. What about you?
I was going to say, let's throw to Grace again after I say my thing. I'm good. I feel like, for example, it's very sort of established as a concept in multiple sci-fi universes that when a ship jumps to light speed, quote unquote, that you can't location track it anymore. That's a concept in Star Wars, but it's, you know, it's also a concept elsewhere, which to me speaks to the idea that we feel like over long distances, it's difficult to maintain communication technology. And I think that sort of makes me feel like everything else we're talking about is sort of explainable or is ideologically consistent within the universe, because the Empire is like, sorry, I'm not going to curse this time, but the Empire is not great at a lot of stuff. Like, stormtroopers are not very effective soldiers. They run the wrong way or just fall over a lot of the time. Like, there's a lot of problems going on, you know? So also, why'd you build your whole thing with, like, this really obvious single point of failure in the, you know, your big weapon that you spent all this money on, and then you, like, build it again, and it kind of has the same exact problem again? I feel like all of this is consistent in universe.
Grace, did she convince you?
Well, no. Unfortunately, because now I'm just back to the meta-ness of it all. Where the best explanation I have is why are stormtroopers such bad shots, and why is there such an obvious flaw in the Death Star? Well, there are many explanations in universe. But the easiest and truest explanation is because that's what the story required. And similarly with technology, we can think about in-universe explanations all day, and I've certainly had fun doing so for the past 45 minutes, but it's much like Star Trek. This was something that came out originally in the 70s, and it's had to adapt over the decades, but to an extent, you can't really change that much because it does have to be relatively consistent. So if all of a sudden Star Wars did have this crazy bananas surveillance state, even greater than we saw in Andor, it just would strain credulity in terms of just fitting within the narrative. So I have done all I can on the in-universe explanations, and as always, I have to settle for the meta ones.
Yeah, and as we wrap up here, you know, you make a great point that there's not really much we can do about it from a meta perspective, because if you're telling a story that's set around the time of A New Hope, you have to stick with the technology of that era, which is based on the technology of the 70s, or what the people in the 70s imagined for this universe at this time. And as much as they're picturing a fake galaxy with all these sci-fi concepts, fundamentally, a lot of what they're imagining, the limits of their imagination or the limits of their aesthetic and narrative choices are based on what they actually had in the real world. And so you just can't be inconsistent with that if you're telling a story set around that time. And I would argue, even if you're telling a story in the time of The Mandalorian, it just goes a little too far for me to suggest that in that 20 or 15 year gap, we suddenly invented Star Wars versions of all the things we have in the real world, and they work super well, and they address a lot of the things that we're talking about in this Hoth Takes episode. So I think they're limited even in that era. I don't know how far forward you'd have to go before it's plausible to start changing things on this fundamental level. So there's not much we can do. There's not much Lucasfilm can do to change that. My question is, if we acknowledge that this is just the way that it is, meta-textually, because they're limited by these concepts, is that a problem for our enjoyment of or our belief in these stories, that they can never escape this prison of this is what they're working with? Does that bother us?
Well, not surprisingly, you know, I'm just feeling a lot more positively about all of this, so it hasn't been bothering me. To me, also, you know, this is supposed to be a long, long time ago. So, like, their technology, they're just on a different path, folks. Like, they just, it all just evolved differently. And so I have more leeway available. Also, because I do feel that tech and tech penetration and tech access, like, these are concepts that transcend, you know, there are issues in our universe. And so to me, it does make sense in universe that these are problems in Star Wars. And so narratively, it doesn't bother me. I'm okay with it. I mean, one thing that slightly bothers me is that the single major counter-surveillance technology of this galaxy is just like a Jedi robe hood, which,
yes,
that, I don't know, it's not quite doing it for me. But overall, as I've said, I'm good to go.
Yeah, I would agree. It doesn't bother me because, except for the robe thing, that is dumb. But as I have said many times before, and I will say again, Star Wars is about vibes. And so, you know, if things don't fully make sense on a technical level, that doesn't matter as much as whether they make sense on a narrative and emotional level. And I think for the most part that Star Wars usually manages to pull it off. And when they don't, there's enough of the vibiness to make up for it. The only other slight tangent I will add is that my personal favorite thing about A New Hope coming out in the 1970s is that now every show, media content, whatever, that comes out of the A New Hope era, people have 70s hair and mustaches because that was the fashion of the 70s, but also the fashion of A New Hope era galaxy. So I just personally love that.
Yeah, I guess I would say in general, I also can just subscribe to the vibes theory and just let things go. You know, I think that the thing in Andor where they don't know that they have Cassian in prison is, for me, actually probably the most egregious.
Yeah, it was
like
rough.
Taking me out of it. If we're just talking about like surveillance and like sort of police state technology stuff, setting aside other things that might strain credulity, that for me is probably the biggest thing that I can think of in the canon Star Wars, honestly, for surveillance. And even that, clearly, as anybody knows who listened to our episodes on Andor, that didn't make a ripple with me in the grand scheme of things, because the story was great and I'm like, fine, whatever, like just vibes, right? Like just taking the grace approach of it's just vibes. So I think that's kind of where I end up too, is for all my kind of grumbling here about how in the universe it just does not make sense, head empty, just vibes.
And also R2-D2 is the original thumb drive.
Yeah, they definitely like loaded up a lot of data on him and just carried him around and hoped
that
for the best.
That concept really did not exist at the time. Like, that rules.
Yeah, and you wonder what would have happened if his like memory got corrupted. He's an old droid, so like having that data on only one data source, that was a big risk. And I think Princess Leia should look into, you know, just getting like an external hard drive that she carries around with her as a backup, because you never know, right? You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, just some redundancy.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to share your thoughts about the episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter @hothtakes. I am Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers. Haley is Burdenator. And our special guest, Lily Hay Newman, is Lily H. Newman. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art. I edited the show, and I also put together our music. And as always, for legal purposes, we want to point out that all Star Wars music and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. If you want to listen to previous episodes of Hoth Takes, you can find a complete archive on our website. That's hothtakes.wordpress.com. And hey, if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. All right, we'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.